Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out, procrastination, putting it off, kicking the can down the road. In, plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out, carpet in the bathroom. Like, why? In, knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
Hey, it's Gemma Spegg, host of the Open Mind Original podcast, Mantra. Every Monday, I'll bring you a new mantra, a simple yet powerful phrase to help you clear your mind and stay grounded amidst the chaos. I'll also share some personal stories, journal prompts, and a weekly challenge to bring each mantra to life. Follow and listen to Mantra, an Audacy podcast in partnership with Open Mind Studios, available now on the free Audacy app and wherever you get your podcasts.
How about it? Happy Friday out there. March 28, 2025 is the date. Welcome into the Gabe Kuhn Show. I am your host, former Memphis Tiger Gabe Kuhn on X at G_Kuhn71 on, again, on X. We have back at the studio, back at the home base, we have Italian George, King George, George Ruggiero on X at King George94. George, how's it going, brother?
Man, oh man. A busy afternoon for everybody here, huh?
Yeah, and with me... The executive producer of the Gabe Kuhn Show would be Connor Dunning on X at CDunning99. Connor, how you doing today, brother?
I'm good. Yeah. I have a job. I'm good.
Yes. Taylor Jenkins doesn't have a job, though. He has been fired. We'll get to that in just a moment. I do need to remind you, we have 2 hours of talk on the way, courtesy of 92.9 FM, ESPN, and yours truly. And we are live at Horseshoe Tunica, right in front of the Caesars Sportsbook. We have giveaways for you. Come register to win $92 in free play at Horseshoe Tunica. We have $50 gift certificates to Guy Fieri's restaurant right around the corner from where we're sitting. And then, of course, we have concert tickets, country concert tickets, that you can come claim. Just make sure you show up, register, come down south, and enjoy yourself. Now, the show... We're absolutely loaded for 2 hours. We have Jordan Rogers to talk some UFL at 4:30 with the UFL opening up tonight. It's on ESPN, Fox. They have all those separate contracts. The Showboats will be playing on Sunday at 11 a.m. in Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium. We'll discuss that and what to expect from the Showboats coming up soon. 5 o'clock, David Cobb will join. And we will talk about the Sweet 16. We'll recap, and then we will talk about the games tonight. Last night was fun, though. Last night was fun for the most part. That Arkansas game to end us all off. I know they blew a lead, and we're used to that from John Calipari, but that was a fun game to watch. From start to finish.
I personally am shocked that John Calipari didn't foul when
didn't
he was up
foul
three.
At three.
It's not like we've ever seen it before.
I don't know.
Not like we've ever seen it before.
True, but I don't know if I – 15 seconds to go. I don't know if I foul with that much time
when
on the clock.
The biggest moment of your career,
it.
One of them involves
understand.
Not fouling up three, you always foul up three.
I get it.
You always foul up three.
We will talk with David Cobb about that and see if he thinks John Calipari made some mistakes last night. And then 5:30,
yes.
Since we don't have a third hour, we will bring on Parker Fleming to talk about everything going on with the Grizzlies. Taylor Jenkins fired. His final tally was 250 and 114, winningest coach in Memphis Grizzlies franchise history. So we'll talk with Parker about that and what is to come. Who is going to take over? Is there going to be a search? We'll see how all that plays out. But, Connor, let's just go ahead and open it up, man. Taylor Jenkins fired. Grizzlies sitting at 44 and 29, tied for fourth in the Western Conference right now with the Los Angeles Lakers. By the way, did you see last night the Bulls, what they were able to do?
Absolutely insane.
10 seconds left. Patrick Williams knocks down a three. They get a steal on the inbound. They knock in another hoop. And then you go to the other end. The Lakers take the lead. And here's Josh Giddey from 47 feet out.
Unfortunately,
they did the Grizzlies a favor.
They absolutely did the Grizzlies a favor. But unfortunately, the day after, I was like, LeBron was right about everything, and LeBron got one on Stephen A. Smith. LeBron had maybe the worst 12 seconds of his career,
right.
And then in overtime had the shot hit over him.
Right.
Josh Giddey hit the shot over him. So, yeah, rough night for LeBron James. One of the craziest endings I've ever seen in an NBA game. And I'm going to say, that little Bulls team,
yeah, they're
kind of turning it on recently.
Yeah.
Josh Giddey's been better, making that Alex Caruso trade not look like the worst thing in the world, because it definitely did when it first happened. And Kobe White, man, that guy can absolutely hoop. I've wanted him to be a Memphis Grizzlies for years, but he's on fire right now.
Josh Giddey, another triple-double. He actually tied on a season basis, he tied Michael Jordan for most triple doubles in a season for the Bulls.
Of course,
in franchise history. So
of
that's
course
funny.
He did.
But back to the real conversation. Taylor Jenkins was fired today. He's the most winning coach in Memphis Grizzlies franchise history. And you know, this was something we knew was going to happen. You can argue the timing and everything else, but I think that's where I want to start. This was something that we have been discussing for the past couple of weeks since we've seen this Grizzlies team struggle and not really find their footing. The defense is not there. Offensively, they've had their struggles. They've had a tough time balancing, you know, getting Ja going with the pick and roll and this sort of equal opportunity offense. It was going to be time. I don't know if right now, with 9 games left in the season, I really can make sense of it. You know, with the timing, there's 2 separate schools of thought. One would say this is unserious. Unserious to do this right before you get to the playoffs. You want to have some continuity by the time you get there and see what happens. But I think the other side, and this is sort of where I stand, and I may be rose-colored glasses here, it feels like Zach Kleiman in the front office wanted to make a move to see if they can actually get something going, find some momentum, see if they can get that interim coach bump. By the way, interim coach is going to be Tomas Asalo. He won the 2024 EuroLeague, really good offensive coach. That's why he was brought in. And we had discussions when he was brought in about potentially being the next guy in line. We'll elaborate on that in a little bit. But, you know, the decision is the decision. I understand it. The timing is where everyone is a little bit up in arms.
Yeah, it's been really interesting to see the reaction from the national media versus people who are local. Because if you're local, I think that all of us have felt like this was a possibility. But we just expected this to happen during the offseason. Like, we've been saying that
it wasn't even a possibility, it was a reality. Yeah, it was going to happen.
We felt like it was going to happen because when you're watching this basketball team, you can't just sit there and lie to yourself and say that everything is working. Clearly something is not working. The offense is working for a lot of the players. It is not working for everybody. It's not maximizing everybody. We've been saying on this show that you've got to find some middle ground between the pick and roll and the equal opportunity offense. And it seems like Tomas is the guy that may be able to do that, because we do know that when before he came over, he loved pick and roll. That's what he loved. And,
yep.
And it sounds like that there may have been a little bit of butting heads about whether or not pick and roll needed to be more in the offense. I think that we can all agree that when you have a player like Ja Morant as your point guard who thrives in the pick and roll, you absolutely need to have more pick and roll. But I'm with you. It's shocking in the sense of the timing, but it's not shocking in that he actually got fired.
Right.
And I do think that this is the Grizzlies looking at this team and saying, this is stagnated, and the one thing that you could hang your hat on with Taylor Jenkins is that defense was going to show up.
And they're going to play hard.
That effort was going to show up every single night. But what we've seen over the last 2 months since the NBA trade deadline is the defense has gone out the window, especially the three-point defense. The effort has gone out the window. Are injuries a part of this? Yes. To be quite honest, I don't think the front office is clean of anything here, because they made some moves that haven't panned out.
Sure.
To be quite honest, getting rid of Jake LaRavia turns out to have been a mistake. Getting rid of Marcus Smart looks to be a mistake, because you could have done that this offseason as well. So that is why the timing of it is surprising, just because there's 9 games left in the season.
And we don't have precedent for it, quite frankly.
You never
in NBA
really
history.
Seen this. But to me, it appears they are saying, listen, we have some faith in Tomas. We think that he can help this team win basketball games. We're going to get John Morant back soon. Let's get some positive momentum for this team. Maybe the interim coaching bump can turn into something. It feels like a bit of a Hail Mary to save a season that was becoming to feel lost despite
yes.
where they are in the Western Conference. And one more thing I want to add is I've seen a lot of reaction from national people being like, well, look at the Grizzlies' record. Well, look at the Grizzlies' record. Well, my counter to that would be, look at the Grizzlies' record against winning basketball teams.
Yeah. Terrible.
Look at the Grizzlies' record since the NBA trade deadline. That's the record that you need to look at. Yes, they're eating against teams like the Utah Jazz, but the Utah Jazz aren't going to be in the NBA playoffs. The Grizzlies aren't going to see the Jazz in the NBA playoffs. They're going to see a team like the Los Angeles Lakers, which a bit of comedy to this move is, though. Hey, congratulations, Tomas. You're going to be the interim coach. There's 9 games left in the season. Oh, and by the way, you might have to get ready
right.
for a first-round playoff matchup with Luka and LeBron
sure.
in a couple of weeks. Good luck!
Yeah, and to your point about not beating good teams, the Grizzlies have beaten one team over .500 since February 3rd, and it was the Mavs. It was the Mavs. That's not really an over 500 team.
And
if you look at what they had at their disposal that game, they had a completely bare cupboard. Kyrie hurt. You had Anthony Davis hurt. They had eight players out.
You were playing center for them.
Exactly. And I think I heard Sham say this, and I think this is correct. They've lost their last nine games against teams above 500.
Bad.
And the average deficit they lose by, the average win margin for those other teams is 13. It's been bad. So this is something that probably needed to happen. Now, if we break down the reasons that it was made right now, sure, I think maybe they think there's going to be an interim coaching bump, but that's a different conversation in itself, because I think you need to be careful with an interim coaching bump.
100%.
Right? Because if Tomas Asalo comes in, you get a little confirmation bias. You see him absolutely getting this team to roll. I think you need to understand, one, Ja Morant will be back on the floor. They're 28-13 with Ja Morant, 16-14 without him. I think he gives them a bump in general. You can't just give that all to Tomas if this team starts winning down the stretch when Ja returns. But also, like, I look at a situation. I heard Jeffrey and Tim talk about this before us. Like, the Rodney Terry situation at Texas. You don't want to fall into the trap of, okay, we have the interim head coach, decent amount of talent, you start winning. I think Rodney Terry got, to the Elite Eight in year one, so they gave him a contract extension and everything else, and he's been fired, obviously. Sean Miller's in there. But you have to be very, very careful about, you know, giving Tomas Asalo a bunch of credit if this team starts winning.
Well, and that's why, listen, I have always been a fan of Tomas. I do think that the things he has added to this offense have been good. And overall, I do think the offense has been successful. I do think that it has needed more pick and roll, and I believe that he will be able to implement that. Well, and that is something I am excited to see. But I am with you. Beware of the interim coaching bump. If Tomas goes out there this offseason and they do a coaching search and they determine that he is still the best coach for this job,
sure,
that's fine. That being said, I do think there still needs to be some sort of external search for an NBA coach for the Memphis Grizzlies, because, you know, the one thing with Taylor Jenkins, and I don't want this to get lost on people, Taylor Jenkins was a very good basketball coach for the Memphis Grizzlies. He was a great developmental coach, but what we have been fearful of is what eventually came to fruition. Sometimes for a team to level up, and sometimes for development to continue, you have to move on from coaches.
Yep.
We talked about it last Friday. You and I sat here right at Horseshoe and talked about, you know, the Steve Kerr situation. We talked about the Cleveland Cavaliers situation, getting rid of J.B. Bickerstaff and bringing in a guy like Kenny Atkinson. It appears like the Grizzlies may have an opportunity to do a move like that, but to do a move like that, you actually have to go out there and search for coaches. If Tomas wins the job, he wins the job, and I'll root for him.
Though.
But I want a search. I want a search. I don't want it to just be handed off to him because he may have some success from the interim bump.
Get in different bags. Don't just go for the analytic guy like Taylor Jenkins.
100%.
See if you, like Mike Brown, see if that would be a fit, that type of thing. Also,
how about a little Steve Nash?
It does feel like this, and I've been hearing this, and there may or may not be a story about it coming up soon, but it felt like, you know, I think we have an explanation for the efforts we've seen from this team, especially on this road trip. It just hasn't looked the same, and that's something you've been able to, you know, hang your hat on. They're always going to give effort under Taylor Jenkins. But I will say this. It does feel, and you don't make this decision without this, it does feel like the situation became a little untenable behind the scenes.
Yeah.
It feels like, you know, I'm not saying he lost the full team, because we've seen in the past, like Jaren Jackson Jr. says, that's my guy. Ja Morant said it. Desmond Bane has said it in the past. You haven't seen it as much this year, but it feels like there was some real friction there in the locker room when it came to Taylor Jenkins and how he was running this thing this year.
Right.
And I didn't expect it to get that way, but here we are. Here we are. It feels like there was some situations behind the scenes we're not privy to where Taylor Jenkins had lost some of the guys in the locker room.
Right, and that's why I'm really interested to see what news comes out after this, you know, because what the ripple effects of this is going to be, because it is very difficult to not just speculate right now, but one of the things that you do think of is a guy who has had the locker room for all this time, and, you know, we've always heard that the players love him. Did something change? And is that why the Memphis Grizzlies decided to make a change now? I do know that across the NBA, like Chris Mannix just tweeted out, that across the NBA, people in rival front offices are very surprised that this happened. He is absolutely going to get hired. Because, again, Taylor Jenkins is a good basketball coach. I just think that this team eventually plateaued. Is part of that because of Taylor Jenkins? Maybe. Is part of that because of the roster construction? Probably. Is part of that because of injuries? Absolutely.
Yes.
All of those things went into effect here. But at the end of the day, all of us could have watched these basketball games the last 2 months, and we were saying something is not working. And again, the thing that you used to be able to hang your hat on with Taylor Jenkins, the thing that I think was protecting him was, one, he had the player support, and two, that defense and effort were there. And once the effort wasn't there and once the defense wasn't there anymore, you had to start asking questions. And again, that is why if you've been watching this basketball team, the timing is what is surprising. The actual firing, I do not think is surprising. I'm going to be rooting for Taylor Jenkins. I hope he lands a job. If you're a developmental team, you should absolutely be calling Taylor Jenkins.
Wizards.
If you're the Wizards, you should be knocking down his door.
If the Jazz move on from Hardy.
Yeah, if the Jazz move on. I've also seen that the 76ers.
76ers are the favorites to land him.
Which is interesting. Who knows? That might be signaling that maybe there's a...
Bulls could be an interesting one for him, the way they're playing.
Yeah, maybe so. Maybe. But are the Bulls ready to make a leap after what we've seen?
And he's got, he's been in the Spurs organization.
I think that's the one that a lot of people are keeping their eyes on. Or the Miami Heat. I think that there is a theory out there that when Popovich moves on, it will either be Taylor Jenkins or Spo. Spo might move on to the Spurs, and then Jenkins could go to the Heat. So I'm going to keep an eye on that little pairing there. I think there might be something there, but
right.
We do know that he has a history with the Spurs, so maybe that could be a thing too. All of this being said, I think that ultimately this is probably the correct move for the Memphis Grizzlies. The timing is very surprising, but at the end of the day, it felt like this was inevitable at some point. And I do think that they're trying to throw a Hail Mary to get some energy back into this team before Ja Morant comes back, to try to figure out this offense before the playoffs, and hope that this gives the team a boost to where they might be able to win a first-round matchup.
Yeah, and Taylor Jenkins, for those that don't know, was not the only one to get the boot today.
Right.
His right-hand men, Noah LaRoche, and Patrick St. Andrews also got canned. And if you were looking for blame, I think there's a misnomer about the offense, the equal opportunity offense, and Tomas Asalo being sort of the architect of it.
Sure.
I don't think he was necessarily the architect of it. I think he's a guy, if you look at his history when he was in Europe and winning the EuroLeague, he does run a lot of high pick and roll. That's something that he wants to do. Noah LaRoche, though, if you want to place blame on... Okay, less ball screens up top, not a lot of on-ball screens. That's the guy that you needed to blame the entire time, because he's a guy who was a big architect of this offense this offseason, and he did not want to get into a bunch of high pick and roll with Ja Morant on a consistent basis. I think one thing I will say, when Tomas Asalo takes over, he will get to a lot more of that, and he'll try to maximize Ja Morant using some high ball screens.
Well, it's interesting. If you go back and you look at that Lakers game that he filled in for, you did see a little bit more
131,
of that in that
114.
Game. And they did win that basketball game. Ja Morant had a good game during that one as well.
It was Dez, Ja, and Jaren all had 20. So it was still equal opportunity, but you were getting better looks.
Right.
And you were running a little bit more high ball screens.
Right. And you and I were talking about this right before the show. A secret little winner here, I do think, is Zach Edey.
Yes.
I do think that it is Zach Edey, because I do wonder as well if there was some frustration maybe from the front office with how Taylor Jenkins was not necessarily developing these young guys, but more so deploying these young guys. Because you know that Zach Edey's been in and out of the lineup. It's been kind of confusing what his role is. And I do think that now if you're running more pick and rolls, guess what you're going to need?
Thing.
You're going to need your 7-4 guy who can set screens, and that is Zach Edey. So hopefully he gets a little bit more comfortability. I do think at the end of the day here, a lot of their struggles this season have been because of injuries, but there is just no denying that Taylor Jenkins' rotations have been an issue this season.
Coaching
as well.
By feel can't
the
really do it.
Coaching by feel hasn't really been there. We can point to here's the problem. I can point to at least 5 games and probably more this season where I could say, yeah, Taylor Jenkins was probably a huge part in them losing that basketball game. And when you are a contending team trying to be a contending team for a championship, that cannot be a sentence. You cannot have your coach. You cannot have a lack of faith in your coach heading into the playoffs or in the playoffs. You've got to be able to rely on him. You've got to be able to rely that he can coach on field. And just unfortunately, we hit the point with Taylor Jenkins where we couldn't necessarily do that anymore. And that is why I keep saying, for development, I think Taylor Jenkins is an amazing coach. But to get a team over the hill, to get that little leap, sometimes you have to move on from a coach, even if he's had success. It is very true. He's the most winning coach in Memphis Grizzlies history. And, you know, I thank Taylor Jenkins for the years here. I have no ill will towards him. I'm going to be rooting for him. But it was time for the Grizzlies to make a change. I cannot believe it happened with 9 games left in the season.
It's Mark Jackson to Steve Kerr, hopefully, or JB to Kenny Atkinson. That's what you're hoping for. We'll see if that actually comes to fruition. But going back to the Zach Edey thing, this is something, and I don't want to act like I'm being revisionist with this, but I don't know if there was like some type of disconnect with the front office drafting Zach Edey and how they were deploying him this year, but there was clearly a disconnect to a certain extent. You draft Zach Edey at number 9, and what does he do best? He rebounds his ass off, hits the offensive glass, and he's a high pick and roll guy. He will roll to the hoop. He could be a lob threat, that type of thing. And like the fact that he was your high draft pick, he was in the starting lineup, and you didn't give him those opportunities as much. It feels like there was a bit of a disconnect even from the jump this season with the plan at center, at least with Zach Edey. It's just kind of strange looking back at it.
Yeah, it is a little bit strange. And that is why, again, I think that Jenkins, when he looks at Edey, was saying, this is a guy who I can develop, but I need to bring him along a little bit more slow. I think the front office probably looked at it and said, no.
He's your starter.
We drafted this guy because he needs to be the starter. Yeah. We needed a center, so he needs to be playing these big minutes. Let him figure it out. Let it be trial by fire. And I think that Jenkins had a bit of a hesitation to do trial by fire, and that was probably where some of this disconnect came into. That is why, again, I'm really interested to see what reporting comes out about this news, because we have some amazing local media members, so I know that they're going to ask the right questions. They'll probably get the stories. We'll get some answers soon about what was going on behind closed doors, and hopefully we'll hear from Zach Kleiman himself, because he does have some answers that there's some questions that he has to answer with this move. But so, and that is one of the main things that I am curious to see, is if there was a disconnect between the front office and Taylor Jenkins on how Zach Edey was being deployed. Because there's just no doubt about it, not having a consistent role if you're a rookie can be very difficult. It can be very confusing, especially if you're a player like Zach Edey, who came from Purdue last year, and we know that what his usage rate was. He came in this year and he was going to be asked to rebound, and he was going to be asked to set screens, and then all of a sudden he wasn't being asked to set screens. So why is he necessarily out there? And that is why I do think that Tomas is going to be able to come in. I hope to see more pick and roll, because I do think it's going to make players like John Morant most specifically, but also somebody like Zach Edey, a little bit more comfortable out there. Now, all that being said, I don't want the equal opportunity offense to go out the window.
No.
Just have more of a melding of the two, because I do think that this week, I don't know if you've seen it. I've definitely seen it. There's been some revisionist history on the Dylan Brooks, Steven Adams,
of course, yeah,
Memphis Grizzlies era. Listen, y'all, those teams had a vibe to them. They had an edge to them.
To be fair, I think they lost something with Dylan Brooks when they
for sure. I'm not denying that they didn't. My point isn't the edge that they had. That you do miss that. You miss having Steven Adams and Dylan Brooks as personalities, as enforcers out there. You miss their defense. You miss Steven Adams rebounding and screening. I can agree with all of that. What you don't miss, though, is how terrible that half-court offense was.
Yes.
We've got to remember the half-court offense. That is the main reason they decided to make some changes. That is the main reason they tried to switch up this offense, is because even though they were having success during the regular season, during the playoffs, it became stagnant, and they were not able to score in the half court, and that was one of the main reasons they were getting bounced early. That's one of the main reasons they had to make a change. So that is why, like, you don't need to go all the way back to just doing pick and rolls, and you don't need to get rid of the equal opportunity offense altogether. Just find a happy medium between the two.
I'm going to ask this, and I just sort of want your opinion, because this is something we've been talking about and maybe alluding to, but we didn't know the ins and outs of it. But Ja Morant's injury and the differences between how Ja talked about it and Taylor Jenkins talked about it, is that something that we may hear here in a bit? Because I have a suspicion we may hear about that with the reporting done by whether it's local or national. The differences in how they spoke on Ja's injury and wanting to be on the floor is pretty stark to me. You know, Taylor Jenkins would say, "Well, we hope he can come back," and you know, he would sort of.
I'm sure he did hope,
and he would basically sit there and you know. When we get later into the season, remember that. When we get later in the season, he's going to play more. And, you know, hopefully he can be on the floor a whole lot more. But then Ja Morant, after, what was it, that Thunder game a couple weeks ago, is saying he wasn't healthy enough to play. I feel like that's something we may learn about. I don't know your opinion on that, but it, you know, me speculating, it feels like there was something going on there.
Maybe so. Maybe so. I'm just not quite sure on that. The whole Ja thing is – interesting because I have seen some people also say that now that Taylor Jenkins is fired, John Brand is going to miraculously come back and be fully healthy. And again,
I think there's some correlation
causation stuff happening here because we also know that yesterday DeMichael Cole announced that John Brand was day to day. So he was already on the track to coming back. Is it funny if he comes? It's a little funny. Like I'm going to acknowledge, you know, it's a little bit funny. We have to ask some tough questions, right? Maybe the question I'm asking. I don't know. I think that Jaw this season, it has been frustrating. I know as a fan it's been frustrating because you want your superstar player to be playing. But at the same time, we know that Jaw has been dealing with some serious injuries. Like, he basically dislocated his hip. You know, he has an AC joint sprain on the same shoulder that he had surgery on. He popped a hamstring in that Cleveland Cavaliers game, which was reported by DeMichael Cole. Everybody, I think, just chose to ignore it and say, well, what happened? What happened? What happened? Well, DeMichael was like, well, what happened during the Cavaliers game? And I think people just didn't like that answer because they were like, well, he dropped 44 points. And I think, well, yeah, it's because John Morant is an amazing basketball player. A healthy John Morant is, at the end of the day, the number one most important thing for this team. If there was a disconnect between Taylor Jenkins and John Morant over his injuries, that is an issue. That is absolutely an issue. Are we going to find out about it? Maybe. I'm curious to see.
Something I'm curious about, though, is going forward with this next hire. Obviously, you want that coach to come in and have a good relationship with John Morant and be able to maximize him. I wonder what type of coach that is. You want him to be held accountable.
Sure.
But you don't want to go too far. Right? Like, some of these old school coaches, the Mike Browns, Monty Williams, or if it was Ime Udoka, for example, I don't know if that would jive all that well with a guy like John Morant. But then again, if you bring in a Tomas Asalo or just some guy from, assistant analytics young guy, sort of the Taylor Jenkins mold,
right,
can he hold him accountable? Is he going to do that? It's going to be interesting. You want to maximize John Morant, but what's the hire that you can make to do that?
I think that it is someone who makes – I think the number one most important thing is you've got to make sure that John Morant feels completely comfortable within the offense he is running.
Yes.
And I don't think that there's any if, and, or buts about it. Like, he was not fully comfortable in this offense. Was it working for a lot of people? Yes. Was it fully working for John Morant? No, it was not. And that is why the number one thing you have to do is make sure you're finding somebody that has a philosophy that matches the way John Morant plays basketball. He is your superstar player. You have to maximize him. No doubt about it. That's going to be number one. I also do think that you need somebody to hold, it's not just Ja accountable, but the whole team. And that's where, you know, the Ja Morant thing, I think, is a nuanced conversation because Ja hasn't really done anything since his incident that needs holding accountable. Mm-hmm. So I do think that you need someone that holds the team accountable in terms of effort. I don't know if I want to specifically point out Ja Morant, though, and say he's the one that needs accountability.
No denying history, though, obviously.
Sure, but it's been a while now since something has happened. So that's where... That is why I think you and I think are both kind of saying that basically we would like a veteran coach a bit. Like, I want somebody with a little bit more experience, and that is why an external search is something that I do want. Ultimately, though, I keep going back to, I would be kind of surprised if Tomas doesn't get the job.
That's
to be
sort
honest, like,
of where I'm at.
They brought him in. The idea of him coming in, we were all like, I think that Jenkins' replacement might be on the sideline already.
The last nine games are going to be a nice trial period.
It's going to be a nice trial period. The playoffs will be a nice trial period. I am wary of the interim coaching bump, but at the same time, we also know that Tomas has experience. He's had a lot of success before, and if the team is in on it, I can buy into that. The accountability thing, I do think might get overplayed a little bit at the end of the day. I do think that you just need somebody that is going to make sure this team remains motivated, keeps them on the right page, and make sure that the effort is there on offense, but more importantly, on defense. My biggest concern of this team the last few weeks has just been that the defensive effort has been non-existent.
Yep.
And that is where... That, to me, is how you know that a team is not operating correctly, is when they are not showing up on defense, when they are stagnant, when they are kind of walking. And, you know, Jeffrey brought up a great point. Like, you would see so many times this season where, like, they were just giving up, like, just buckets in the lane, and they weren't even trying to defend it. And that's how you know, I'm not saying the team gave up on him by any means, but something was not working.
Closing
the motivation
out of the
wasn't
line,
there.
The three-point defense was rough. And here's, if I'm breaking down the Taylor Jenkins experience, good coach, sure. I understand that part of it. But, you know, when he was hired, it's not like he's an offensive coordinator. He needed to bring somebody else in to do that.
Right.
He's not necessarily a defensive coordinator, even though his teams played good defense.
He was a development guy.
He was a development guy, and he would get his teams to you know, play hard. Even in the 27-win season, you saw a lot of guys rise up and meet the occasion. But when all that went out the window, the question you ask yourself, if you're Zach Kleiman and why this decision was probably made, is what? Okay, if you're not getting them to give good effort, if our defense is struggling, you know, bottom of the league since the trade deadline, what are you doing?
Right.
What are you doing? So, very, very interesting. Now, we are live at Horseshoe Tunica. Make sure you pull up and register to win some prizes. We have $92 in free play to the casino floor. We have $50 gift certificates to Guy Fieri's restaurant, and you can win country music tickets, country concert tickets right here at the Horseshoe Tunica. So make sure you get down here. But we need to switch gears. We need to switch gears. Coming up this weekend, we have week one of the UFL season. We're 2 years into this thing. We have the Showboats. Obviously, there's been some changes. We talked with Jim Turner, their head coach, yesterday. They'll be playing on Sunday against the Michigan Panthers. And there's going to be a guy on the call by the name of Jordan Rogers. Obviously, you know him from SEC Network and ESPN covering college football. But he is one of the main UFL analysts for ESPN. So let's go ahead and bring him on next and preview what we're going to see this weekend.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now back to the Gabe Kuhn Show on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Back in and rolling right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. And joining me now, a guy who talks college football and, of course, talks some UFL. That would be Jordan Rogers on X at JRogers11. Jordan, how's it going, man? Good to talk with you. Thanks for carving out some time.
Absolutely. Couldn't be better. Football's back, right?
Yep.
Got to be in a good mood when you hear that.
Yes, 100%. 100%. And we have ESPN covering. We'll have Showboats here. We'll have Showboats. I had Jim Turner on yesterday, so that was nice to see the Showboats trying to figure some things out going into this season. I know it's not a good situation for Ken Wisenhunt to step away on the eve of the season, but hopefully Jim can get those guys going in the right direction. But that'll be on ESPN coming up on Sunday. I want to start here, though. When we talk about all of the spring leagues and the ulterior leagues outside of the NFL, what have you made of the UFL and how it has gone through a couple of years thus far? Obviously, it was the merging of the USFL and the XFL, and that's where we're at right now. What have you made of the general success of this league thus far?
I think it's getting better with every iteration. I think one of the best things to happen is with the merger of the USFL and the XFL, you had a player pool of about 800 guys. Now, when they merged, they cut that down in half, right? Half the teams, you got eight teams, so the player pool is now around 400. Every coach I talked to over the last couple of weeks is just saying this is the best roster from a talent perspective that we've ever had. And that's just the reality of football. Football is a tough sport. It's tough for the NFL to field 53 or 60 really elite players. And so when you cut down that player pool, you have a smaller group of teams, smaller group of players, everybody's talent increased. Right? I think we're going to have better football. But I tell you what, the thing I love most about this league, and I think what this league has captured and is pushing that is best, is the access.
Yeah,
I'm excited. This is going to be my first time on the UFL. I'm excited being a football nut myself is you get to sit back and you can hear every coach call plays. I mean, there's going to be drives where I'm not going to talk, and that's probably going to be the best part of the broadcast because we're going to be hearing the coaches call in the plays. You're going to hear what the quarterback says and how he relays it to his team. We're going to mic up. We got everybody mic'd up. We got cameras everywhere. We got something called the chess camera, and it literally looks like Iron Man. It looks like Tony Stark. There's a camera that's built into the chess plate of the Mike linebacker, or maybe someone else. You're going to see a vantage point that maybe you've never seen. You're going to get the curtain lifted of the game of football from a terminology standpoint, an access standpoint. Shoot, we might interview a quarterback right after he throws an interception on
right.
the sideline, or right after a touchdown. Hey, what'd you see? What happened? The access is going to be unbelievable for people that love football. And like I said, the talent, I think, is the best that this league and any spring league has had thus far.
We'll get more to the talent in a second because I think there are some challenges with the way rosters are constructed and how you have to sort of turn them over every year. But I do want to get to the innovation of the UFL because
People may think I'm corny. My listeners may think I'm corny for bringing this up, but I don't know if the UFL gets enough credit for the innovation, right? The NFL themselves have adopted the dynamic kickoff, which started with the XFL. Yep. You look at like ESPN Bet and the integration they're going to have into the broadcast. You brought up all of the vantage points you'll have. You'll have a cam on the Mike linebacker's chest. I want to see if that cam actually stays on through the game because there's some big offensive linemen that may knock that thing down. But like the sideline communication, talking to a quarterback right after he throws a pick, like these are some innovative things that we have not seen in any football broadcast in the past. And I think the UFL does not get the requisite credit for the amount of innovation they have brought to the game the past few years.
No doubt. And you mentioned it, right? The NFL is adopting things. It's really a trial ground for some of the technology and the adaptions to the game that I think we need. One of them that I love is you can challenge any play and any call, no matter what it is. Now,
love that.
They could look back at a replay and you could actually get a penalty on you, even though you're challenging something completely different. But love that aspect. You can challenge anything at any time. Another technology advancement that I already know the NFL has their eye on is something that we call true line. So all the balls are actually chipped. And so anytime there's like a third down and that ball gets maybe close to the first down, and that's where, you know, the old school chain gang's going to trot out and it's going to take a minute and a half to figure out where it is. That chip is actually going to tell you, well, it was actually 4 inches short, or maybe it was 3 inches past the
line.
You're
speaking to my soul with that one, Jordan. That one speaks to my soul.
So things like that, I think, are great. And back to the camera on the chest plate, just, you know, so player safety is important. It is literally integrated into the pad, so that thing can't come out. It is built to be hit, get tossed around. There's some kind of crazy stability technology on it. Not sure how they do it. But it's going to be really cool. I think that technology is an awesome aspect of this league.
I know some people have the problem with, you know, they like a little bit of human error when it comes to officiating a game. But I will say the chip balls is something I have always advocated for because I don't know about you, but I've long held this opinion. I think short yardage refereeing, spot refereeing is one of the biggest problems we have at all levels of football. I truly believe that. I mean, I look at the playoffs last year in the NFL. Look at the AFC Championship and Josh Allen getting two first downs. Ultimately, he doesn't get those first downs, and we have to go the other way, and the Chiefs ultimately win the game because of that. I think a chip football would have changed the complexion of the AFC and the NFL completely this year.
No doubt, and that's something that the NFL will continue to monitor, and depending on how it goes and how it progresses in the UFL, something you could see adapted pretty quickly if it's successful at this level. And kind of back to the refereeing aspect, I love how this league humanizes the referee and really the process of refereeing. Because we've all been on a couch rooting for a team going, man, that's a terrible call. Why did he call that? Look, there's going to be bad calls in every game. But what I love is that we're going to hear the referees communicate why they did call some, or maybe what they couldn't see. And oftentimes you go, oh, that's why they didn't call it, man. He was blocked by, you know, the offensive line or something. And that's the human element that we know is going to happen, but we can kind of lift the veil on some of that. And Dean Blandino can talk us through everything about the refereeing aspect as well. So I think that kind of, again, breaks down that fourth wall and you understand how difficult it is to ref, you know, what they're seeing, what they're not seeing, and why they're calling certain penalties. And so you can you may not always agree with it, but you might understand it a little bit more.
Well, we always call for transparency. We're going to get it and see how we like it. How about that? that's the reality of it. Now, going back to the talent pool, and you've talked with coaches and they say this is the best talent pool they've had, whether it be XFL, USFL, UFL. Yeah. There is a challenge with that, though, because what the UFL has allowed their players to do is we're not you know, cornering you to play with the UFL forever. We want you to put out good film so you can potentially get signed by the NFL, and there's been a lot of examples of that. So I will say, when you look at the challenges coaches have to deal with year over year with rebuilding a roster, how big of a challenge is that for coaches that you've talked to in regards to the lack of continuity maybe every year?
Yeah, I think that's what it is, right? This may be the most talented group I think we've seen, but to your point, how that develops and what that looks like and how long it takes the chemistry to develop, because this is a very condensed camp. There's only a handful of weeks they're together. The practices, they're not out there scrimmaging a ton. So it's definitely hard when your roster's turning over 60, 70, 80% for some of these teams because they lost some of their best players to the NFL. And I think a way that I'd love to see this fixed in the near future is I really believe that the relationship between the UFL and the NFL needs to continue to evolve and get stickier. Because I was somebody who signed a futures contract after a year of practice squad, and that doesn't mean anything. Like, that team doesn't want me to sit around all spring and come back in fall camp. Like, they know if I have a strong arm, if I'm big, if I'm fast. They know all the intangibles. They need to know if I can play football. They need to know if I can get better at playing football. And that's where I'd love to see the NFL be able to allocate players on those future contracts to certain teams to go play in the spring and then be able to evaluate. So the more that relationship evolves, I think the easier it will be for teams to understand when they're going to have players, where they're going to be, how long they're going to have them, and that roster turnover will be a little bit more predictable at times. But you're right. I mean, these players are getting poached by NFL teams, and that's what every coach wants. I talked to Mike Nolan this week. He's like, look, goal number one for me as a coach is develop these players, get them back to the NFL. Goal number two is win. Now, that was interesting how he put it that way. Look, they're all competitors. They all want to win, but they want to play these guys and get these guys opportunities, and that's really what the league's for.
Can we pull back? I want to pull back the curtain a little bit. What is the relationship? We know, like, the general idea of the innovations and the rule changes the NFL has made based on the UFL, but what is the relationship between the higher-ups in the UFL and the higher-ups in the NFL?
You know, I think you could compare it to, like, dating on an app. Right? They see them, right? And they know all about them. They're swiping through photos. They're kind of paying attention to them.
They're just deciding when they want to go on that date.
Exactly. They haven't really taken them out on that official. They've been sliding in the DMs a little bit back and forth. I think I'd love to see that relationship get a little bit more concrete, whatever that may look like, if it could look like that down the road. But right now, kind of like we mentioned with some of the adaptions to the game, the kickoff, the rules, the technology, the NFL is definitely keeping a close eye, and I think they know this could be great long term. But as far as that relationship, you know, hopefully it continues to evolve in the future.
Yeah, and listen, you brought up the futures contract. Like, I played at the University of Memphis for 4 years, tried to do the AAF contract, and I know a good spring league from a bad spring league. The AAF was a bad spring league. I completely understand that, and this one clearly is run the right way. They understand that they have to get into the positive, find their money-making opportunities before they really expand. And I appreciate that. They tried to do some cost-cutting things and make sure that they are established as a league before they really unveil the entirety of what they want this thing to be. So I've always appreciated that. But it's just nice, and I know you just sort of spoke to this, it's just nice to have guys who slip through the cracks in NFL conversations be able to have a chance somewhere else.
Yeah.
Because previously, like when you were playing, there was just no other opportunity. You could maybe go to the CFL. You could go overseas, you could play in Germany, things like that, but there was never the back-at-home opportunity, and the UFL has provided that.
Yeah, and I went to the CFL, but that's a different game, right? It's 12-on-12, that guy's moving. I mean, it's not the same. And so as a quarterback, I kind of went up there knowing, hey, quarterbacks don't usually go from CFL back to the NFL. I kind of just wanted to keep playing. I'd have loved if there was a league like this at that time. But, I mean, you got guys that were second, third, fourth-round draft picks that have played 20, 30, 40 games in the NFL maybe 3 or 4 years ago and then found themselves either injured or a practice squad got cut and just haven't got that really second or third opportunity. And guys are getting those opportunities because they're able to step out on the field and teams are going, oh, outside of the practice bubble and outside of, you know, running scout team, which is complete BS. You know, you can't really evaluate a player on scout team on the practice squad. So these are great opportunities for these guys to actually just play football, get out there and show, hey, I still got something left in the tank. And also for those guys that never really got that chance, maybe didn't get the NFL and a smaller school and just needed the opportunity to get more eyes on them, I think it's doing both.
What's your experience with that? Like, when it comes to, like, players that just fall through the cracks, like, these players are good enough to play in the NFL. They just never got an opportunity.
Yeah, it's tough to evaluate different conferences and the level of competition, right? I mean, when you're talking even just group of five teams versus the power four teams, a lot of guys in the group of five slip through the cracks because you're a good or great player at that level. But, man, maybe we'll take that third receiver at Alabama because we saw him have a couple good games against the, you know, NFL caliber players. And this other dude put up, you know, 1,000 yards, but he just didn't play anybody. He just hasn't had the opportunity to go, hey, against whoever, I'm a good player. You don't get that opportunity unless you have a spring league like this or unless you just happen to wow somebody at a camp by luck. So I think this is the league of opportunity. It's the league of second and third chances. And I'm pumped to be a part of it this year because I was kind of one of those players who I needed that second opportunity. I tore my groin. You know, my first opportunity as a undrafted free agent with the Jaguars, missed camp, signed with the Bucks, was with them for an entire practice squad year, signed a futures contract that our coaching staff got fired, so I didn't get picked back up, bounced around a couple more times, and I just never got the opportunity to get out on the field and show that I could or couldn't,
right?
You know, play because there wasn't this kind of option.
Yeah. Now, talking with Jordan Rogers, college football and UFL analyst for ESPN. Now, I want to get into the Showboats. Showboats here in Memphis, they'll be playing at Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium coming up at 11 a.m. Central, 12 p.m. Eastern time against the Michigan Panthers. Not ideal situation for the Showboats. Talked with Jim Turner yesterday, and Ken Wisenhunt was supposed to be the coach. He had to step away for personal reasons. Jim Turner's going to take over. What do you make of the Showboats coming off a really tough year last year? They got the number one overall pick, took Jason Bean, former quarterback from Kansas. What do you think of the Showboats team this year and their chance for improvement upon what was a dismal season last year?
Yeah, I mean, I think the roster is definitely better. Here's what I love about Jim Turner's opportunity is, you know, he's not going to replace who Ken Wisenhunt was from, you know, Wisenhunt's, you know, past as an NFL head coach, his play calling abilities at that level as well. But Jim Turner is a ball coach. He's an offensive line dude. He likes
former Marine, right?
Exactly,
like he's
oh yeah,
hard nosed.
I mean, if there was anybody that was just going to tell you, hey, we're in a tough situation, but buckle up, because this is what pro football is, and we're going to figure it out. I think he's the right man to fill in at this opportunity. I love the fact that they have E.J. Perry. I think there's a great storyline for this game, especially against Michigan, because he started four games for them last year. They're big and athletic at wide receiver. And in this league, you cannot win. I don't believe you can win unless you have a quarterback that can make plays with his legs. And E.J. is an underrated athlete. I think his ability to make some plays off schedule when things break down in this league is paramount. I think he's going to get a lot of pressure. I think this defense is going to say, hey, we're going to force you to get the ball out of your hands. But I like the experience. I like his knowledge intimately of this defense. We were talking to him on the phone, I think it was yesterday, and he's already, oh, when they do this blitz where Frank walks up in the gap and they end up bringing off the side pressure, you know, they bring the slot corner on a blitz. He's talking through stuff. He already knows about this defense because he was there for 2 years. I think that kind of chess match in this game is going to be fascinating. And because of all the access and the audio, we're going to get to hear a lot of that. We're going to get to hear the defense's calls. We're going to get to hear EJ audibling when he sees something that maybe he recognizes from all those times in practice. So I think it's going to be a great game. I think Memphis is going to be much better. I think Michigan feels like they were a play or two away from being in the championship last year. And I think they feel like they can make that kind of run again this year with the squad that they have.
So there's a couple of guys from the University of Memphis that are on this Memphis Showboat squad. Jalen Allen, who got some run with the Broncos a year ago. You have Joe Skates, who was a wide receiver, really highly productive at the University of Memphis, and then went to the Dolphins, was a practice squad guy for a year. But those guys are both on the roster. Talking with guys behind the scenes, how important is it to find that local flavor? To create a little bit more of a home relationship for that fan base by bringing in some of the guys that they've seen in the past?
Well, I think it's great for the fans. I think the connection, I mean, that's how this league initially is going to thrive and continue to thrive, right? Is that connection we have with either your alma mater or a college team that you rooted for, and you go, oh, I remember that name.
Yep.
Right? That guy, I remember watching him. And now you have another opportunity to watch him at a different level. I think that's the stickiness of this league. That's where stars, relationship that fans create with the players. The unique part about it is that maybe not everybody knows is the headquarters for this is in Arlington, Texas.
Right.
All eight teams and all players and coaches are out there practicing every day in the same facilities. There's a unique kind of feel. Yes, there's competitiveness, but we were talking to a couple players yesterday, like, yeah, I'm holding the door open for this guy that I'm going to be, you know, hitting in the face 2 days later, you know,
right,
as they're walking through the facility. So I think the hometown nature, but it's very unique, almost like collegiate feel for all these players kind of being in the same facility, competing against each other, creating relationships. It's pretty unique.
Now, final thing for you, Jordan. I just want to bring up the dynasty that's been created through a couple of years in the UFL. How about my guy Skip Holtz, who, you know, like up and down career as a college head coach, he gets into the UFL and here's two straight championships. We have a dynasty. What is that particular franchise, the Birmingham Stallions, doing different than everybody else that has led them to have this type of success?
Well, first off, Skip is one of the best. He is you're going to want to tune into a UFL broadcast on ESPN or ABC with opposed coaching. I think we have one in a couple weeks because I might not say a word. We're going to let his mic be live the entire game. He's hilarious. He's around players. He is completely unfiltered. He's one of the best. The reality is, in this league, in order to win, I kind of alluded to it earlier, you got to have a quarterback and a dual threat quarterback at the most important position in football. You got to have a guy that can make plays. And Alex Magoo was that a couple years ago when it was the USFL. He was the MVP. Last year it was Adrian Martinez, and Matt Corral even had three starts and three wins there. They've always had a dynamic quarterback that can make plays. And that's where every team's kind of searching for that guy, right? Michigan Panthers, they're going to play two guys, Bryce Perkins and Danny Etling, two guys that kind of have some mobility, some athleticism. Everybody's searching for someone to make plays off schedule, to be dynamic. I think Stallions have done that the best with who they've had. They got Alex Magoo now back from the Packers practice squad. I forget, he was a wide receiver, so you know the athleticism's there. That they've kind of cornered the market in getting hot with a quarterback at the right time. Had two of them play really well last year. They're going to be one of the best again this year on both sides of the ball. But I think the playmaker at the quarterback position has been the difference for them.
Now, real quick, I do have to ask you this. You're going to be on the call this weekend. How are you going about that? I think you're going to be on both of the games, right? Or just one?
No,
you'll be Panther showboats.
Yeah, we'll be Panther showboats. Me and Joe Tess. Joe's flying in from London. He's got WWE, I think, tomorrow. That guy's right. Unbelievable. I mean, all fans should ever want is Joe Tess from the boxing days, the fight night days, the WWE calling UFL football. It's going to be amazing. It's going to be something to see.
And you got to bring it up with Joe. I actually, my lead into my show has a clip of him talking about my relationship with my grandfather, Easy Bake Oven. He was on a call for Cincinnati and Memphis way back in the day. See if he remembers. Oh, he remembers that. That'll be fun.
I'll have to mention it to him. Yeah, that'll be fun.
For sure. Well, Jordan, have a good call this weekend. Appreciate you joining. And I want to do this again soon, man. So we'll be in touch.
I'm around. Sounds good, Gabe. Thanks, man.
Yes, sir. He is Jordan Rogers. He talks college football and UFL. He's an analyst for ESPN SEC Network. Make sure you go follow him on X @JRogers11.